for just about everything for the outdoors. Go to MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Joe Giglia, and this is your Insights edition of Blue Collar Elk Hunting, where we want to talk and learn about all things elk. On today's special edition, it's a conversation with John Stallone from the Days in the Wild podcast concerning a petition and a ballot initiative that is proposing to make it illegal to pursue, shoot, snare, net, or capture any wild cat in the state of Arizona. Y'all, John and I discuss the petition, repercussions, and how you can take action to prevent this attack on hunting as well as those yet to come. So, pull up a chair, adjust your volume just right, and welcome to this special Insights edition of Blue Collar Elk Hunting.
Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunting, brought to you by ElkGrows.com, with your host and elk hunting coach, Joe Giglia. You want to hunt elk, and they live to hunt elk. Their goal is to share with you what they have learned grinding it out for over 35 seasons, doing what they love. So come on into camp and set a spell. Welcome to Blue Collar Elk Hunters.
Man, I tell you, today's an important topic because not only is he talking about this on his own Days in the Wild podcast, but John's on with us today because he wants to talk about his home state, some things that are happening there, an initiative that has been started by the Humane Society of the United States that would ban hunting of lions and bobcats in that state. And for a lot of people, you're wondering, well, what does this have to do with elk hunting? It has everything to do with elk hunting. It has everything to do with hunting. And we're going to talk about that on today's show. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it. And thanks for the kind words in the intro. Just a little quick background about myself. I've been hunting since I'm five, and I'm 45 years old now. So 40 years of hunting, 30 some odd years of bow hunting. Been living in Arizona since 1991, so almost 31 years now. And so I've hunted elk that long and mule deer and coos deer and javelina. But my original background is from hunting whitetail back east. I was born in New York. You know where some of this comes from and my a little bit more about my background. I have a master's degree from Colorado State University in rangeland management and ecology. I am a certified deer steward from Clemson University and a certified forester from Penn Forester. I got a professional certificate from Penn Forester. So I know enough to be dangerous. I don't practice. My main business is swimming pools and not anything to do with the wildlife management or wildlife biology. But I know enough, like I said, to be dangerous. So when I look at things, I always look at things from the eyes of wildlife management. Even in my day-to-day life, I've kind of grew that way. It was a very systematic way of looking at things and coming up with a solution that benefits everything, you know, a holistic view. And that's always been
right.
That's always been my premise. So I just wanted to lay that foundation down so that you know that this is not coming strictly from my love of hunting. It's coming
right.
from my love of the habitat, of the animals, and everything that goes with that.
Right. So. Yeah, so the whole purpose of this is an information show. This is a show to get the word out for hunters to understand what's going on and to mainly understand that, you know, sure, this is happening in Arizona, but it's happening all over the United States. And this is just one part of a movement that it becomes a domino effect from one place to the other. And that's the goal of some people that have started this initiative. So
right.
The exact goal and we and
the thing is, you know, we're going to talk about, I'm going to let you explain this, what's going on in Arizona, mm-hmm. but we're going to talk about and relate this to what's already happened in California, and the effects it's had there,
right.
and our role and what we need to do, how to be proactive and how to do the things we need to ensure that we protect the science of what needs to be done and in protecting our animals and conserving what we have right now.
Right, right. Exactly. So in your introduction, you were talking mm-hmm. about people being able to vote on it and so on and so forth. So in Arizona, the Game and Fish Commission makes all the rules, and it's everything is presented by the Game and Fish Department. So it's, right. it's not something that – it's not a ballot box thing that you can do. But what they do is every 5 years, they relook at all the rules and they relook at all the laws put in place. And we have a comment period from January 1st to January 31st. Mm-hmm. So what is happening right now is that HUSIS is laying down the foundation for them,
which is forcing them to. HUSIS, you want to explain that name? Because
yeah, HUSIS is Humane Society of the United States. Mm-hmm. They're the main driver. There's a couple other organizations kind of going hand in hand with them. That's Arizona Mountain Lion Society, and then there's another smaller biological group in Tucson that I don't remember the name right now. Mm-hmm. that is involved. And what they're doing is they're getting their followers, their peers to comment on this open comment session that saying that they want these things banned. And what happens with that is there's going to be this skewed view of everything because there's all these comments coming from that side. And now when the Fish and Game Commission go to look at the comments, they're going to see 2,000, 3,000 emails from people saying they don't want mountain lion hunting. And we don't even know that this is going on. If it wasn't for somebody in the department that kind of leaked it out,
mm-hmm.
there would be no opposition from us. So, and then in the commission's eyes, there's all these people that are against it. And nobody, you know, against for. Hunting, and yes. there's nobody yes. for hunting
right.
commenting. So what happens is it forces them to look at relook at everything and possibly structure a law. So the last time this happened, I want to say it was 2017, Arizona lost some mountain lion privileges. We were allowed to hunt them year round. We didn't have a season. It just became more strict. So what they did right. was, let's throw them a crumb, you know, let's appease them a little bit. Right. And that's what happened. And this is what's happening across the country is that we keep, you know, the old saying, giving them an inch and they're going to take an arm, you know, mm-hmm. and it keeps going that way. We keep giving in little by little. They're chipping away at everything, every little thing. And our hunting rights are going away because of it. And it's not has sometimes very, very, very few times there is a valid point. And when it is a valid point and it is going to help the overall system, I stand by that because my ultimate goal, like I said earlier, is that we have healthy, you know, populations out there, that the habitat's healthy, that everything, that the whole system works the way it should work, right?
Right.
But almost all the time, it's all driven by their, I want to say emotion, right? It's driven by their emotions and not looking at the big picture. And that's what our goal should be. So I sit on the board for a new organization called Howlful Wildlife. And what Howlful Wildlife does is just this, what's going on right now, only deals with hunting bans and how it's related to wildlife management and hunting. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Hunting and fishing. I shouldn't say I'm leaving fishing out because there's a lot of this going on in the fishing world too. So it's sportsmen. It's a tool for sportsmen to use to direct their voice, because we don't have that right now, right? So what we have Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, we have, you know, Bighorn Sheep, we have Whitetail Unlimited, we have Mule Deer Foundation, we have all these different organizations, and they do great work, but their main focus is on their niche, and it never brings us together, right?
Well, and even like Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, they're, by how they are legally, they're not able to lobby. So
right, okay. Yeah. So and we're not. We don't want to lobby either. So that's what we have Sportsman's Alliance for, and groups like that, Boone and Crockett Club. Those are the lobbyists. Those guys are. Once it gets to litigation, or at that point, what Howlful Wildlife wants to do is play the same game that our opponents are playing. And that is nipping stuff in the bud before it even gets to a point where it's a problem. So you brought up California. California, right. This is how we started as an organization. Last year, there was an initiative to remove bear hunting altogether. And we put out the word. We used several different tools to gain 20 some odd thousand people signing a petition. Right, that's what we use petition for, that particular thing. So
right.
We 20,000 plus people in 2 days, and we said, "Boom! Here you go. See." The public doesn't want this. And guess what? They removed that from the ballot immediately. And we were like, wow, this is powerful. We did it again with the hound hunting in, it was in Nevada. Yes, it was Nevada. The hound hunting in Nevada, boom, got it removed. And we're like, okay, now there's something to this. The reason why, and I went and we looked, the reason why we lose so much, it's because we sit there and wait. Like, our systems for doing this
right.
are reactive. So slow. They're all reactive, mm-hmm. right? This is still going to be reactive. We're not pro on anything because we're not going to go poke the bear if we don't need to. But it's slow reacting. We wait till it gets to the point where we have to throw money at it and throw lawyers at it and so on and so forth. And then, you know, it becomes a bigger problem, and it's costly, and that money could be going to habitat development, could be going to other things, right? That
absolutely
that these
yeah.
other organizations want to use it for. So what Hal's doing is basically that we're gonna get everybody together, virtually get everybody together and nip stuff like this in the butt, And that's the main premise behind Howlful Wildlife. And I'll get into a little bit more how we're using that for this particular initiative that's going on right now. So this is like mm-hmm. perfect for it, because it's not yet where we're fighting for, you know, directly for it, you know, because it's not on the chop block yet. But it will be.
Right.
Because it has to be, because that is the way the system works. And they're playing the system very well. They know that if they do this, the fishing game has to do something to satisfy.
Well, it's a very planned out strategy.
Right. Yeah. Like I said, they're laying the foundation for it. And so we need to lay the foundation. And it's been the MO of these organizations to do this for forever. You know, they're mm-hmm. constantly throwing things at the wall and seeing what sticks. And one analogy I like to use is like, criminals, they'll go commit mm-hmm. a small little robbery or something to see what the response time is of the cops, right? Of the police. And
right.
now they know, okay, now we could go do this big heist because it takes them 7 minutes or what, you know, whatever the case may be, you know. And this is like the same thing. This is the same thing that they do constantly over and over and over again. So when one might, you know, I'm going to play devil's advocate, maybe one will say, well, you don't want to show your hand then, right? But no, the thing is, our voice will resonate and it will stay. It'll stay there. It's not like you're blocking it once. You're now the fishing game knows, oh, well, there's 20,000 people that will not, do not want this. And not to say that they couldn't rally to 20,000 people, but they like low hanging fruit and they keep going after low hanging fruit. That's why they've already got rid of coyote calling contests. And listen, I never really did coyote. I'm a predator hunter, but I never did a contest. I understand it doesn't show, you know, you're not winning the hearts and minds of non-hunters with stuff like that. So for me, I was like, I was on the fence, but I was upset that we were going to lose another right. But the actual right that we were losing, I wasn't completely like, okay, as long as you don't lose predator hunting, I get the contest. Thing. I got it. You know? So like there's certain little things that like, yeah, you may think is okay, but it's just an avenue for them to go, okay, we got this. Let's go to the next thing. Let's get sets precedence and it sets the next thing and the next thing.
In a sense, we almost got to police ourselves a little bit. I don't even know if I want to use the word police ourselves, but we have to, like you said, we have to, you know, present ourselves in a positive way to, I mean, there's 10% of us in the country that hunt. There's 10% that are anti-hunters. There's 80% in between that have no opinion that, you know, when things like this happen, it's good that we have educated that opinion so that they understand it and they understand the purpose, they understand the goals of and what hunters bring to the table for conservation and ensuring the proliferation and this resource that these animals that all of us love so much are going to be here for such a long time. So I see that, you know, and you know, when you bring that up, though, you actually talk about some of the problem amongst ourselves, though, John, in that, you know, so many of us, we feel like, well, that's okay, as long as we protect our own little niche, whether we're an elk hunter or whether we're a houndsman or whether we're, you know, we all have our own little hunting cultures and we have this tendency just to stay in our own little bubble and not worry about what happens as a whole. Mm-hmm. And things like this do have a huge effect.
Right. It's crazy that people don't realize that. I mean, what does a guy in South Carolina who hunts whitetail and hogs give a shit about, you know, a guy in New Mexico hunting elk? They don't, right? And that guy probably will never go elk hunting. He might want to go. He might dream about going, but he probably will never go. Mm-hmm. And so that's the mentality. Here's the problem is actually a good buddy of mine, Sam, we were talking about this a couple years ago and he brought up this and it's a biblical thing. And I can't remember exactly how it goes. I'm probably going to screw it up. But the basic premise behind it is, you know, I asked John for help and John refused me. And now that John needs help, I am no longer there to help him. Because what happens is like, so, all right, let's say I'm a lion hunter. Lion hunting goes away. Okay, now I'm like, okay, lion hunting goes away. I'm going to pick a new hobby, right? I'm going to go, I don't know, snowboarding instead. That's my new thing. I'm going to go mountain biking. Mm-hmm. And you know, 5 years from now, you, the guy I asked for help, is an elk hunter. And I'm like, hey, now they're coming for elk hunting. And you go to me and say, hey, I need your help. Well, one, you didn't help me, so I'm less likely to help you. But two, I'm not there anymore. I'm not even in the hunting thing. Like, that's not even my thing anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'm kind of making it very drastic right there, but that's what's going to happen is they're going to get one thing. They get their foot in the door with one And then they go for the next thing, and then they go for the next thing, and they go for the next thing.
As you lose those opportunities, you lose hunters. And as you lose hunters, you lose voice. As you lose voice,
exactly,
you're going to, all continues to go downhill from there.
Their biggest advantage is that we are so divided as a group. And we're not divided in the sense that we hate each other, but we just do different things. So we're not together. And plus, it's an individual sport, right? For the most part, technically, right? Mm-hmm. It's not really a team sport. So they use that against us. We need to be unified, have one voice, one howl, so to speak. And that's what Howl for Wildlife is focused on, is to unify us all in one direction. And that one, you know, one is not as strong as many. And we're all going to be focusing our efforts in one shot. And I think it's silly for us not to be that way, because you're spiting, you know, you're cutting off your nose to spite your face if you don't get involved. You know, if you can't be bothered by something that you don't do, even though it's adjacent to what you do, it's going to eventually come back and get you. It's eventually going to come back and bite you in the ass.
Well, so. And it happens in other ways. And this is maybe a little bit of a rabbit hole there, but you know, you talked about California, and there were a lot of hunters in California, and as they started to lose those abilities to hunt, some of those things get restricted. They decide to take their passion elsewhere. And, you know, you have other states out there that still support that. It's still part of their culture. Mm-hmm. And that starts to look a whole lot nicer. So then all of a sudden, now you have this vast exodus of people from one state going to another state, which creates a whole different problem.
Right, exactly. Well, I'm going to tell you right now. So here in Arizona, and not necessarily an exodus, but well, I mean, there has been an exodus here. There's millions of people moving from California to Arizona right now. But even those that are not moving, I just came back from Southern Arizona. I was down there for 2 days hunting for myself. I saw, I'm kind of giving you arbitrary numbers, but 80% of the vehicles I saw had California license plates. About 5% were from New Mexico and a couple from Texas and Idaho. I did not see any Arizona plates down there where I was hunting. Is that crazy?
It really is.
I mean, the part of that has to do with the popularity of this hunt, and influencers and so on and so forth kind of promoting it. But it has a lot to do with what you just said, because they don't have the same opportunities. I mean, there's plenty of opportunity to hunt in California. I go to hunt in California all the time. I'm not saying that they're, you know, it's not void of. And there is a lot of hunters there, lots and lots of hunters.
Right.
But
as you do,
but I understand
things like
what you're saying.
Get rid of mountain lion hunting. Well,
they have to go somewhere else.
Directly. Yeah. Well, but that's going to affect your deer herd. That's going to affect your ungulate, you know, all, especially, you know, like you were talking about bobcats and, you know, and I know they've done studies here in New Mexico that one of the high reasons for mortalities of calves are bears and bobcats.
Right.
You know, so has a huge effect on the elk herd.
I actually have those numbers for you. So we're talking about California, right? So this is real interesting, right? Before the mountain lion ban, bears were stealing mountain lion carcasses or kills. You know, a few days after it's been killed, you know, they've fed on it a little bit, but they haven't finished it. And the bear comes in and claims it for his own. That was somewhere in the 40 percentile of that happening. Okay. So 40% of black bears, because mountain lions are subordinate to black bears, steal their kills. Okay. Which causes mountain lions to have to kill again to keep on feeding. Right. So, that's a problem. Ever since the mountain lion deal, 77% of black bears, or 77% of mountain lion kills, are stolen by black bears. Because there's so many more mountain lions killing and has right. more carcasses laying around, the bears don't have to hunt as much themselves. They're taking mountain lions. So the mountain lion, who's a much more efficient hunter, is going to kill more deer, more elk. Okay, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Bear, you mentioned bear are, they are responsible for 10% mortality on elk calves.
Right.
And bobcats are responsible for 10% mortality on fawns and deer. But the main thing that is, so if we go back to mountain lion, so we did a, it's well known, it's well documented in many states, different countries, that a mountain lion needs at least one big game animal a week to
right.
live. So the state of Arizona, the fish and game is estimating about 2,500 lions right now. And it's been as high as 4,000 in recent years, not like in the past, like a long time ago. Actually, a long time ago, there was less lions than there are now, believe it or not. There was a study done here in the early 2000s that said a healthy population of mountain lion for this state is somewhere between 1,100 and 1,800 lions. And we have anywhere between 2,000 and 2,700 on any given year here. So we're already well above the carrying capacity of lions.
And how many lions did you say are taken a year?
Last year we took 320.
So here's another point I want to bring out that a lot of people don't understand. Huge point is there are approximately about 10,000 tags sold in the year for mm-hmm. mountain lion. 10,000 tags.
Yep.
And only less than 400 mountain lions are taken.
Mm-hmm.
That means 9,600 of those tags times whatever. Because the reason people get mountain lion tags is it's incredibly – I mean, I don't know how many mountain lions you've seen in your lifetime walking around the
right.
woods.
I've seen quite a bit, but I spend a lot of time. That's the whole thing is most people in their whole lives will never see a mountain lion. And
they
go out and buy this tag just in case they see one so they could take a legal crack at it, right?
That's absolutely.
It's a huge point you bring it up. There's a big revenue chunk of revenue there that will be lost. It's like a donation. They're giving it just to give it. It's less than what is 320 divided by 10,000? Is that even less than 3% or is that 3%? I think it might be 3%. Yeah. 3%.
Yeah.
3.2% is what that is.
Well,
because of the
science, because of the research, because of the wildlife agencies that we have, I'm not sure about Arizona. I don't know about there, but like in New Mexico, we have a cap. Only so many can be taken
same
per
here.
County or in different areas.
Absolutely. We have the same thing here.
So, I mean, you can sell 10,000 tags, but as soon as you reach your number within that
threshold.
Closed.
Correct.
Yeah, it's closed off. It's not like, I mean, they use numbers like that, like 10,000, and say, oh, well, man, we only have 2,500. We're going to kill them all off. No, they don't.
That's
science,
the thing.
Man.
They don't show that. They don't show that because why would they show that? That doesn't fit their agenda.
Yeah, and yet we got 9,600 some tags that are actually money coming in for conservation and preserving our wildlife.
Right, exactly.
And they want to eliminate that. That's almost counterintuitive of what the goal of a humane society should be.
Most of what they do is, to be honest with you. So one of the main things I want to bring up, and I don't know New Mexico's numbers, but in Arizona, there's about 110,000 mule deer, 50,000 coos deer, 30,000 elk, 40,000 javelina.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Those are the main ungulates that get eaten by mountain lions and bears, okay, and
right.
bobcats. Bobcats' mane is what do they call legomorphs, which is like your rabbits and stuff like that. So
mm-hmm.
I'm leaving bobcat out because they only occupy 10% mortality, you know, on fawns, which is a significant number, but it's not for these numbers I'm going to give you. So that's a total of 230,000 animals, right?
Mm-hmm.
230,000 animals, and there's 2,500 lions, okay? 2,500 lions times 52 weeks. That's 130,000 big game animals a year that die from mountain lions in Arizona alone. 130,000. That's more than half of the total population, right?
Right.
They did a study. 66% of the kill is mule deer. And then the next is elk. I don't remember what the number was, but something like 25% is elk, and the rest is split between the coos deer and javelina.
So I think your point being, if I see where you're going, is that if we don't control these numbers, and those numbers do increase, and that means that more of those ungulates are taken and those other animals are taken by cats because they are not in control, then that is going to directly, I mean, if there's less now, less elk, less deer, mm-hmm. now you're going to have to control that with less tags and less hunting opportunities as well.
Yeah, and I'm going to play devil's advocate. So the first thing you're going to hear out of a anti-hunter's mouth is, mm-hmm. well, before man was involved in the management of all this, it all was fine, right? Something to that extent. That's, you know, very vague.
Right.
But if
take us out of the equation.
Take us out of the equation. No more hunting, right? And mm-hmm. and we saw this happen in Kaibab, which they almost completely destroyed the Kaibab. Because it was an experiment. But if we let the predators do what the predators do, right? And
sure.
they don't keep in check, and the fishing game doesn't do their flyovers and knock down the coyotes, and nobody shooting lions and bears and bobcats, and we just leave nature be, right? Eventually, In a bubble situation, let's say in a wilderness area that is really not affected by man very mm-hmm. often, eventually it might even itself out. But it will take decades and decades for that to happen. And what's going to happen originally is the predators are going to keep killing, right? Until the big mm-hmm. game is dwindled down to nothing. And then the predators are going to start starving off, or they're going to switch to a buffer species like rabbits and so on and so forth. And then they're going to start dying off. And then once they die off and the predator, and then the prey population keeps coming back or not keeps coming back, but starts coming back.
Sure.
It will eventually even itself out. But the problem is that man, this only works for those. My dog's barking in the background. Sorry about that.
That's all right, man.
This only works for those bubble situations, right? So, man is so heavily involved in everything, and you know, I said this to you earlier before we got on the podcast. When you and I were kids, there was less than 5 billion people in the world. There was like 4 billion something, and we're at 8 billion now, and we keep putting our hands in so much stuff that now it's our duty to manage. Otherwise, it's going to go away because we have taken away habitat. We've taken away resources. We constantly consume, right?
Absolutely.
So, you know,
yeah, so man is not going away. And so that part of the equation isn't going to disappear. And what people don't realize is that there's other changes that affect that bubble as well. I mean, you know, game used to be migratory at a time, but now because of cities, because of population, they're not able to reinfuse areas with animals from other areas. It's only what's within there. And, you know, I mean, also, like, I think weren't like jaguars and some other animals added to this initiative in Arizona as well that are already protected?
They brought it up. I think they brought it up because they didn't want fish and game. This was back in 2017, I think, or maybe it was the previous 5-year portion. Because they did not want fish and game to do any research on jaguars. And and actually we had an incident, and you'd have to look, I don't remember. This is some years ago, Macho B and Macho A. We had two collared jaguars in southern Arizona, and one of them died, and the fish and game got sued by Husis, I think, or some other, you know, big group. It was a big thing, and that's how it got put on there. So now fish and game can no longer even monitor the jaguars here in Arizona, and we have them. I mean,
right. And what most people don't understand is that jaguars are, even though they're a cat, the study on those are they're critical because those are also cats that don't like competition. Jaguars were one of those animals that got rid of other predators that competed with them. So, and a lot of people don't understand that, you know, they, there's so many intricacies to this whole dynamic, and we absolutely, it's too late for us to not take part in it. If we don't take part in it, a lot of people don't realize, for example, here in New Mexico, New Mexico was void, completely void of all elk. Not one elk. In 1911, the first 15 elk were brought into New Mexico by a private landowner. In fact, on the ranch that I guide on up here, they were brought in, and then another, it was either 15 or 30, and then another small group was brought in by the state. Every elk that we have in this state right now originates from that group that
Arizona
was
is a similar
brought
story.
In.
Similar story.
Yeah.
There were, you know, basically, we did not get down to full extinction, but it was pretty darn close. And then they, you know, most of the elk that we have here and you have there are all from Yellowstone.
Correct.
Yep.
Yes. Yep. And brought in by hunters.
Yep.
The monies to create the herds that we have now that all these people want to see, that all they love, that all these elk that they love so much were brought in through the monies of hunting and hunters, and hunters taking care of their resource and ensuring the longevity of that resource. I mean, it's just so many things that people don't know and understand out there. I mean, it's hard for people to believe that you can be a hunter and a caretaker at the same time. They just think that it's about taking and taking and taking.
Right.
But that's, and that's one of the reasons that we have scientifically based departments of wildlife in our states to ensure that that is not the case and to utilize the monies in the wisest form and wisest way possible.
Right.
So, you know, and look, I know that these people are passionate about what they do, just like we're passionate. But when you let passion override the science is when it becomes a problem.
Yeah. Listen, I'm going to play a little devil's advocate with you on it there. Our passion or our desire to have it comes from an emotional place too. Right.
Sure.
And so I don't fault them for having emotion about it. But what I do fault them is for not looking at the big picture, for not looking at the consequences of what they're asking. In their eyes, they're saving Bambi or they're saving a cute cuddly bear or whatever. They're not looking at it through the proper lens and saying, well, you know what? This cute cuddly bear is here because of this, because of these efforts, and I'm going to continue to be able to watch this bear. I don't have to shoot it. That's my prerogative.
Sure.
I can go take photos of it. I can do whatever I want.
Sure.
And it's there and exists because of wildlife management and the North American conservation model. And that, I mean, it's going to be very hard for you to teach people and to change their mind about that. But I've had these conversations many times with people, and I don't, you know, you catch more flies with honey than you do vinegar. So it's important for you not to be combative and be, you know, argumentative and don't throw things in their face, but you need to let them know, hey, did you know this? Did you know that? Do you understand that where money comes? Like it's funny. A few years ago, I was doing this workout class with a bunch of young guys. They were all in their early 20s and late teens and whatnot. And here I was 40 something, and I had to go work out with all these guys. And somebody brought up that, oh, that John's a, you know, bow hunter or whatever, and got into the discussion. And I asked, you know, this group of 10 kids, and I'm like, hey, do you guys know where the money for wildlife conservation comes from? And, you know, I'm like, five of them raised their hand or whatever. And every one of them had the same thought process: taxes. And I'm like, no, it doesn't actually. It doesn't come from property tax and income tax, and, you know, and it comes from an excise tax called the Pittman-Robertson Act. And it comes from tag sales, and it comes from donations to these, you know, hunting groups like Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation and Mule Deer Foundation, et cetera. And they were all floored. And, you know, and I explained it to, so there's a big void with the non-hunting. They just don't understand it. They think we're a bunch of Elmer Fudds out there shooting willy-nilly out the truck, and we don't care about wildlife. And, you know, it's their money that we're getting to do these things on, but they don't understand that the wildlife is there because of the efforts of sportsmen.
Yeah. And I'll take that education just a step further. I mean, take the situation, and we go back to California. We go back to California because that's actually the litmus test right now.
Yep.
And, you know, you go back to California, and where the hunting for the cats was stopped. Now, I believe, I can't remember what year the exact numbers, but I'm sure we can find those. But the state had to pay to have
lions removed.
Lions removed, man. I mean, I think they had to pay and issue over 200 and some tags just to take lions because of the issue that they have. Now, the state is using monies that were set aside for conservation and to help the animals, and instead of letting hunters take care of that and actually putting money into the system, like what you're seeing in those 10,000 tags in Arizona, now they've
lost all
of that.
Stuff like that happens all over the country. So
yes,
back east, Virginia. I know exactly in stat. I'm going to give you some stats in Staten Island. Okay. Staten Island, New York. It's a very populated place, but they're overrun with turkey and overrun with deer. Literally, there's turkey sitting on park benches, and they will chase after you. And, you know, like, and there's deer everywhere, and they have a Lyme's disease problem. The state paid, and I don't know exact numbers, but I want to say it was $5 million to a program to have deer neutered, basically. Sterilized.
Depredated.
Oh, no, sterilized.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
Okay, they didn't want to kill the deer. They were capturing bucks and making so that they cannot reproduce.
Wow.
I think they were successful on, like, 25 bucks. Swear to God, 25 deer. They were able to capture like 25 deer. It was some ridiculous number. I'm don't quote me on the numbers, but it was a ridiculous amount, like $5 million. The best part about it is they could have charged for a special class for you to do urban bow hunting and could have charged for a tag and could have made, there was, I don't remember what the number was, but they could have made like $1 million.
Sure.
Instead of spending $5 million. And
correct.
They would have taken the correct amount of deer out of the herd to make it a healthy population.
Sure.
Okay.
And wouldn't have traumatized the deer. And,
right.
And all of that.
I had a buddy in West Virginia. He was paid by the state. He was a paid sharpshooter to go kill deer at nighttime in the suburbs because those counties would not allow bow hunting in the suburbs. And I'm like, that makes no sense. Zero. Mm-hmm. Absolutely zero sense. That goes on with predators all over, and predators like all over the country. There is government trappers and...
Absolutely.
Why? Educate the hunter. This is how it needs to be done. This is how you want, you're allowed to do it, and charge them. And now there's money. Now there's more money, a surplus of money, and it's not a liability to the state anymore. It's stupid.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely ridiculous. But
yeah, and like you said, that's education. People don't know and they don't understand. And so I you bring up another point when you're talking about how we have to talk to people. We need to be educated in those conversations.
Exactly.
I mean, when we become angry and we start just using name calling and stuff like that is because we haven't done the work. And so all we do is we just react emotionally doing the same thing instead of an intelligent conversation that, you know, maybe that one person that you're talking to, they might not want to listen. That could be where their head's at that point. But other people around that argument are hearing it as well. So, you know, I'll take 4 out of 5. I'll take 3 out of 5. I mean, that's a win, right?
So 1 out of 5 is a win, right? You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Yeah, no, yeah. Education is key. So that's, I mean, I'm going to challenge your listeners here. Go educate yourself on the North American wildlife model, okay, as best you possibly can. Arm yourself with the knowledge and then have open dialogue with non-hunters about it so that they understand. It's really easy to start a conversation by, hey, you know, do you happen to know where the money comes from? You know, I mean, it's kind of hard to throw that out of the blue, but if it comes up, hunting comes up, you can ask that question and I guarantee you they will not know the answer. And when you give them the answer, automatically you could see a light turn on and be like, okay, maybe this isn't as, you know, barbaric or, you know, whatever view they have of us. But, yeah, you got to start changing hearts and minds because the middle ground, we've been saying that forever. The middle ground is the most important thing that we need to survive.
You know, John, another buzzword that's being used with all of this is trophy hunting.
Oh, God, I can't stand that. Trophy hunting drives me nuts.
Yeah. So, and which I have so many. I'm a retired coach. I coached for 34 years. And, you know, when people talk about, I mean, we live in a trophy society, you know, I mean, we live in a society that, I mean, how many billions of people are going to be watching the Super Bowl? How many are spending their days every Sunday watching that process to get there? And everybody taking their kids because they want everybody to get a trophy. I mean, and what does that represent? It's basically just something that's supposed to be a memory of an accomplishment. And it means so many different things to different people, but it's basic, you know, when you look at that, trophies and honoring and memory, you know, keeping special things in our life. Photographs are for a lot of us are a sense of a trophy that we put up on our walls of our families, our loved ones, our favorite places that we visited. You know, I mean, the whole selfie society is based on a sense of a trophy. In other words, an accomplishment that we did that we just want to keep track of as we go through life and have those memories. I mean, and when they talk about trophy, it's like people are just killing that just for the strictly of just putting that up there and but you know, and look, I think there are in anything, in sports and jobs and marriages. I mean, there's trophy. I mean, I hear about
trophy wives,
trophy jobs, and, you know, different things like that.
How about trophy husband?
There you go. I am absolutely sure that there are people out there that that's their mindset.
Yeah.
But that does not tag the entire thing for that small percentage. And I mean, all of us try to, you know, learn and mature and live our lives a little differently. But, you know, that whole thing there, that's the one thing that word is, again, a word that has to educate. I mean, you can take a look since time. You can come here in Albuquerque and look on the petroglyphs where, you know, in caves, people have done drawings of deer, of their hunts, of their, you know, bears taken, worn claws, worn the tooth or feathers or, you know, all of that is strictly to hold on to the specialness, to the accomplishment, to the memory. So, you know, that's,
yep.
But again, we got to be able to explain that with passion, man, and explain it in a comprehensive and an intelligent way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you did a really good job of that right there.
Yeah.
People can use your words. There you go.
Well, I want to give another, you know, you were talking about people educating themselves and how to read up and look. You know, I would suggest there is a podcast. Go look up the Western Huntsman podcast. Mm-hmm. Jim Huntsman did an interview, I think it was last year, with Dr. Valerius Geist, G-E-I-S-T. And it is one of the most incredible podcasts that you will hear from the science side on the importance of not creating a predator pit and the importance of the North American model and how the choices that we make are not emotional choices, but scientific choices that have to happen. So I tell a lot of people, go out there and listen to that. Get educated.
I actually plan to have,
do your own research.
I plan to have them on the show for sure.
When
you told me about him earlier, I looked him up. I already started the process of reaching out to him. I'm going to have him on the show for sure.
So, John, what are the things, what are the proactive things that our listeners can do?
Okay.
Number one, to help with this situation in Arizona, but then let's talk about after Arizona.
Well, the best thing you could do right now is go to Howlful Wildlife, sign up to be a member. Doesn't cost you anything. You're not going to get bombarded with emails, newsletters, none of that stuff. The only time Howlful Wildlife is going to contact you is when something like this comes up. They're going to say, hey, they're coming for, you know, coyote hunting in New Mexico. Help us out. That's the only time you're going to get any correspondence. Doesn't cost you anything. Howlful Wildlife runs off of donation. Okay. Once you sign up, click on the take action button, and on there, you're going to see the Arizona lion and bear band. Click on that, and you're just going to put your name and your email, and you're going to hit send, and it's just going to put you, it's going to put you in as that you signed the petition that you're against it, and it's going to automatically send your email to the decision makers that says, I am for science-based wildlife management, and I oppose the banning of hunting, legally hunting lions and bears and bobcats in Arizona. Best thing you could do. So go, it's howlforwildlife.org. It's H-O-W-L for wildlife.org.
.org. Yes, I just looked it up right now.
Okay. It's super simple. Once you've gotten started there, moving forward, that's honestly the best thing, because we're going to keep in contact with you on any issue that arises in any state that that negatively impacts wildlife management.
Right.
We're not going to get involved in, you know, like over here in Arizona, we had a trail cam ban. Utah just had a trail cam ban. If it doesn't automatically, those are people problems, and we don't get involved with that. Our their goal is to protect wildlife and hunting and fishing rights directly correlated with wildlife management. So,
absolutely, and I would even encourage people, you know, to Join organizations like Sportsman's Alliance. Join your in your state. Find your wildlife association in your state that supports and promotes hunting in your state. Become a part of that. Become active in that. Learn. You might not agree. And here's the other thing is there's parts of some of these associations, as they get bigger, a lot of times there's things done and stuff that you might not agree with. Do not just throw the baby out with the bathwater, man. Get involved. Have those conversations right within your organization. Make yourselves better. That's the only way we get stronger and better. We are not able any longer to go hide in our corners anywhere in this country because somebody else's problem is going to find your corner.
Yep, absolutely.
Whether it's through legislation because it happened in their state and they use that as a template for coming to you, or whether it's people mass exodus from other states to come to your state so that they can enjoy what you have. And what ends up happening is that resource, that opportunity gets choked down more and more and more. Mm-hmm. And as it gets choked down, that means less people are going to be able to enjoy that. And as less people, again, less voice, more restrictions, less right opportunity until we've lost what we have. Absolutely.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, what you just said, that has a lot to deal with social science. We talk about science, not emotion, right?
Right.
Even though it's really a broad and not very well defined term, because like I said earlier, it's our emotions why we look to science to do these things, right?
Correct.
You're talking a lot about social science, and that's a science in itself. And so if you don't feel like you agree with everything, it's good to let your voice be heard within your niche, within the organization, within, and that way we're better represented as a whole, you know? So,
absolutely.
And I don't want to go down a rabbit hole with that. So what I'm going to ask of your viewers, like I said, I already challenged you your listeners. I challenged you to educate yourself. I'm challenging you to go and stand up with your fellow hunter, whether you're ever going to hunt in Arizona or ever do predator hunting or don't care about anything like that, stand up, go to Howlful Wildlife, become a member, sign the petition. It'll take you about a minute of your time to do so. And also I'm going to put this out there. We are looking for a New Mexico representative. Assuming you got a pretty big following in New Mexico. Somebody who will have their finger on the pulse and be the liaison with the Fish and Game Department there for Howlful Wildlife. So if you're interested in that, just hit me up on Instagram or something like that. John Stallone, DM me and we'll talk about it. So,
Do you guys have liaisons I know there's the National Wildlife Federation, but like we have New Mexico Wildlife Federation, each of the states has some of that. Do you guys work in conjunction with any of these organizations?
Or? We are trying to develop relationships with every pro hunting organization right now. We want to be their tool. That's the main goal, is that we don't want to see, cause right. I'm going to tell you a little ugly truth about conservation groups. There's a lot of competition between the two of them for money, or between all of them for money.
Right.
And that's why they're very focused on their niche. And that's why that's why we fail a lot. What we want to be is the common tool that, you know, the Mountain Goat Alliance and Ducks Unlimited can use to achieve the same goal, and that's to stop these initiatives by anti-hunting groups. And that, so our goal is to be involved with everybody, but not to be in competition, or to be everybody's tool to do that. And I want to basically, I want to see us all be one unified pack when the time comes to stand up against them. And that's the main goal. And, you know, once we've stood up together, then we break back off into our little clans and do our little perspective or respective niches that we like, and that's it. And but when it's time to protect hunting as a whole, we come together. Simple as that. You know,
awesome. I will include links and everything, John, for all of this information in our show notes.
Great. Excellent. I appreciate it.
You betcha, man. Anything else, Bud, before we close out here?
No. I think that's it. I think I beat the dead horse enough. Well, I've stood up on my soapbox enough. You know, just be kind to your fellow hunter and remember it's, you know, we're all in this together. Whether you
the problem that is way it ain't a dead horse, Bud. Man, it keeps getting resurrected. So, every time we think that sucker's down, it gets back up. So, yeah. Well, guys, John, thank you very much. Appreciate your time. Appreciate your passion and your intelligence that you brought to this whole position today here. And for everybody else out there, I thank you for listening in on this special yes. edition of our Insights edition. And all I want to tell you out there, man, is get involved, become part of the voice, become part of the solution. If we just continue to stay in our own, you know, be negative, to not be united, we're part of the problem. Be part of the solution, not part of the problem. Y'all, keep dreaming of the screaming, believing and achieving, but most of all, keep grinding. Until next time.